22. That can't be good, Owen says. Just means that whoever was buried there isn't dead yet, I tell him. He nods. Kind of what I was saying. And maybe wasn't born yet, I add. Either way, he wasn't a god.
Tsul Kabuki?
I have a good chuckle at my expense. Tsulkalu. If there's a 12-foot-tall hunter god wearing a kabuki mask in these woods, I'm liable to shit a brick. Owen's eyes spring open.
You said
you will too.
But Dad will...
Dad uses the same language, I tell him, just not around you. But I wouldn't give it a whirl anytime soon. My father steps between us.
What are you two yammering about?
He sees the now empty field.
Oh. What has happened?
Enola asks. She's looking at her hands, watching the rain run over her skin. She turns her eyes to the sky full of twisting gray clouds, angry at our arrival. The air is thick with ozone and humidity. Had I been at home, I'd have sat on the front porch and enjoyed the spectacle, at my age and Owen's. Out here, without cover, trapped in the past, it's not exactly a good time. We haven't gone anywhere, my father tells her, motioning to the clearing, which is familiar in every way except for one. It's time that has changed. We've traveled into the past. Instead of reverence or awe at the burial mound's absence, Enola looks mortified. I thought she'd be happy about the apparent resurrection of a god. Tsulkalu wasn't a nice god of the hunt.
He wasn't like your Jesus Christ, she says. Mercy, grace, and forgiveness are not his virtues.
What were his virtues? My father asks. Enola's frown deepens.
Hunting everything.
Everything? Owen asks. Including every... one? Like people?
He was a monster. The slayer of man and beast. My ancestors' reverence for him was not adoration but fear.
Enola looks ready to bolt but manages to hold her ground. Then why were you paying your respects? My father asks. Enola is disgusted by the suggestion.
I came to spit on his grave, on behalf of all Cherokee, before we left our lands for good.
Well, then it's a good thing he was dead when you spat on him, I say with a smile. I nearly say something about how a real god couldn't die and certainly wouldn't be buried on a mountainside in Appalachia, but her sour reaction to my comment clamps my mouth shut.
How is this possible? She asks.
My father starts to explain the situation as best he can, and Owen and I step closer to where the mound had been. There's not even a hint that something is missing. The ground is flat and covered in tall green grass, bending under the weight of heavy rain. What do you think? I ask my younger self.
It's horse.
His voice drops to a whisper.
Shit.
What is?
The god stuff.
Yep, anything else? I'm really just trying to distract him from the horror of our situation, not that he's struggling. Maybe it's me who's struggling. At age 11, I haven't experienced the mind-numbing pain of loss, or seen men under my command gunned down. He's seen a lot already, but he's still been spared the worst life has to offer. He looks around the clearing, eyes locking on where we'd been standing. Look at the grass. It's missing where our legs were. He's right, and it's an observation I failed to make. We crouch by the leg-sized holes. There are beds of neatly cut grass blades where our toes had been. Where our legs stood, there's nothing. Objects from the future displace what's in the past.
That's probably a good thing,
Owen says, and then he scans the field.
Where's that kooky guy?
Shit. Boone. I stand up, worried that he'd finally decided to cut his losses and strike out on his own. But he's right where we left him, by the field's edge. He's on his hands and knees, pulling up grass. When Owen and I approach, Boone looks up.
It ain't here no more.
I don't need to ask what he's talking about. The massive pipework in the ground is more of a mystery than the burial mound, and it's much more pertinent to our situation. I'm intrigued by Enola and her stories. This is my backyard. But it's not going to keep us alive, find my friends, or get us back to our own times. I kneel down beside him and start yanking up grass. Owen joins us, and we quickly clear the growth and then several inches of mud. When my fingers scrape against something solid, I stop digging and give it a knock. The metallic echo is the same as before.
Apparently there's just more soil atop the pipe in this era. Whenever that is. Hands covered in muck, I hold them out and let the rain rinse them clean. My whole body is saturated. If not for the summer heat, I'd probably be shivering. If we jump back into winter right now, we're screwed. Lightning flashes and thunder booms as a stiff wind blows through the trees, pulling green leaves free and twisting them through the air. Boone ducks from the sound and shouts over the rolling roar as it fades into the distance.
We need to find shelter.
Our house isn't far, Owen says, and then he thinks better of it.
Oh, our house isn't there yet.
Honestly, I'm not sure if it would be there or not. These pipes are from the present, but so is my truck. Unlike Boone, shelter is not at the top of my priority list, and right now neither is finding Cassie and Levi. The shift from winter to spring made finding them a near impossible feat. With the rain obscuring our visibility and the thunder and wind drowning out our voices, we could pass within 50 feet of them and never know it. The best way to help them and my family is to get to Synergy, find out what's going on, and put a stop to all this before Minuteman and his people turn the place into a shooting gallery. If that's his intention. Circumstances put us at odds, but do the laws of the United States apply when the country hasn't been founded yet? Whatever is happening here, it's bigger than Synergy, bigger than my present, and the potential ramifications grow with each jump back in time. I'm not sure how far back we are now, but it won't be long until we're the only people of European descent on the entire continent. My father leads Enola over. She looks confused, but not quite outraged by what he's told her. Then again, she believes in a giant human hunting god, so maybe the concept of moving through time won't be a stretch. You see? My father says, motioning to the exposed pipe. This is from the future.
What is it?
She asks. A pipe, I tell her. A tunnel, made of metal, big enough to... It's big enough to walk through, that's for sure. That there is any part of the facility I don't know about is problematic. It's my job to protect it. The existence of this conduit means I haven't been told the truth about the facility size. How far-reaching is it? Where does this tunnel lead? I turn left, imagining the pipe's progress. It would cut past my house, maybe 100 yards to the side, where some road work was done a few years back. Beyond that, it would eventually reach town. From there, it's anyone's guess. There's no way to know where it ends, but I know where it begins. We need to reach the peak, I declare.
What about your friends? Boone asks.
They'll have to wait, I tell him, along with your men, not that you're concerned about them. He gives a noncommittal shrug.
What is on the peak? Enola asks.
The people who did this. I motion all around, at the sky, the rain, the summertime trees. And no, they're not gods. They're just men and women who didn't know what they were mucking with. Or maybe they did. Either way, I'm going to get answers. I stand and say, I'm going to move fast and straight. I'm about to suggest anyone not up for it can wait here, but who's to say the next jump won't turn the clearing into a killing field? The best place for these people to be, loved ones or not, is with me. So try to keep up.
We could use your help,
my father says to Enola. He might be right, but I think his invitation has more to do with his concern for her well-being. She watches a purple streak of lightning carve its way across the sky, and then turns her head toward Black Creek, several miles toward the south. Was Black Creek built atop her tribe's location, I wonder, and then I shake my head at the moral inadequacies of my ancestors. Of course it is. What better way to erase the past than to build on top of it? Enola is the first to strike out, heading uphill. When we follow, she looks back at me.
Can I go back home?
I don't know, I tell her, deciding that honesty is the best course of action.
Can you stop it?
I'm not sure. I break into a jog. My body aches, but I push beyond the pain, focusing on the weight of the old rifle in my hands and the deadly potential it possesses. But I'm going to try. Determination carries me for another 20 minutes, straight up the mountainside. And then exhaustion slows me to a walk. No one complains when I slow. Our clothing is saturated. All of us are carrying more pounds than we're used to. I peel off my t-shirt and wring it out. I wipe my face with it, pressing it on my eyes for a moment.
When I pull it away, I flinch to a stop and nearly spill backward down the incline. My father catches me with one hand while clasping a hand over Owen's eyes.
"What is it?"
Boone asks, trudging up behind us. The grizzled beard and weathered face are hard to mistake.
"It's Arthur,"
I say, even though I'm the only one of us to have ever met him. Then Enola fills in the detail I left out for Owen's sake.
"It's half of Arthur,"